Welcome to the White Paper. This isn't just another tech podcast. This is where we pull back the curtain on emerging technology and blockchain, where we don't just talk about the future, we break it down before it happens. I'm your host, Nicklin Decker, a venture capitalist out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. But before that, I was the guy in the shadows investigating corporate fraud, embezzlement, and intellectual property theft for Fortune 500 companies. For over 17 years, I tracked hidden assets, exposed fraud rings, and worked alongside federal agencies, district attorneys, vice units, and more, all in the pursuit of the truth. And that's what this podcast is about, truth. In the White Paper, we cut through all the noise, break down blockchain, and make sense of the tech that's changing our world. No jargon, no hype, just real conversations about how emerging technology is impacting business, finance, and everyday life. I'm here to bring clarity where there's confusion and to speak in plain truth, because in Oklahoma, we say what we mean and we mean what we say. So buckle up. The future's coming fast. Let's make sense of it together. Welcome back to the White Paper. I'm your host, Nicklin Decker. Everyone is talking about decentralization, but no one agrees on what it means. Some describe it as a technological breakthrough, some treat it as a philosophy, some defend it as a new economic order, and others view it as a threat. Yet the real problem is simpler. We are using the same word to describe entirely different realities. In today's conversation, we're not here to add another definition. We're here to recover the original one, the one grounded not in speculation, novelty, or ideology, but in constitutional design. Because the truth is this: decentralization is not new. Technology didn't invent it, the Constitution did. The framers of the United States built decentralization into the very operating structure of the Republic: shared authority, separated powers, jurisdictional boundaries, and a system where no single entity may govern without the accountability to the people. What technology calls decentralization, the Constitution calls restraint. And before we can discuss blockchain, digital identity, programmable finance, or the future of governance, we must understand how we arrived at this moment. So, let's step backwards, not to nostalgia, but to memory. Decentralized systems did not begin as a cultural experiment or a rebellion against institutions. They began as a matter of national survival. 1964, Rand Corporation, Paul Barron. The question was not innovation, it was continuity. How does a constitutional republic communicate if its center is attacked? Barron produced the first formal network topology distinguishing centralized, decentralized, and distributed systems. It wasn't computer science, it was strategic deterrence. A distributed network meant the republic could survive even if a major system was lost. That idea became operational 5 years later, 1969, ARPANET. Developed inside the United States Department of Defense, ARPANET institutionalized the principle: no single node should be a point of failure. This was decentralization for the purpose of resilience, not autonomy. Then a shift. 1982, David Chaum. Chaum bridged security with civil governance, proposing systems capable of operating among mutually suspicious parties. His work reframed decentralization as a democratic safeguard. Authority must be verifiable, even when trust is not universal. Then came the inflection point few recognize. 1991 to 1995, Belcour, Haber, and Stornetta. Their research conducted inside a federally mandated infrastructure provider central to national emergency readiness produced the first functioning chain of evidence architecture. In 1992, with the integration of Merkle aggregation, it scaled. And in 1995, Surety deployed it, the first commercial blockchain, not to create money, but to secure truth. When you look at this progression, the narrative becomes unmistakable. Decentralization did not begin as an attempt to escape governance. It began as an attempt to ensure governance could never be destroyed. RAND identified fragility. DARPA engineered survivability. CHOM introduced accountability. Bellcor operationalized proof. Which brings us to the moment most people believe decentralization began. 2008, Nakamoto. Bitcoin was not the first decentralized system. It was the first synthesis, a live implementation of decades of research demonstrating that distributed consensus could function without a central, trusted authority. Not a rebellion, not a revolution, but a milestone in a lineage that began with constitutional structure, survived through national defense, and matured through verification science. So before we discuss what decentralization should become, we must acknowledge what decentralization has always been. A safeguard against concentrated power and a structural guarantee that authority remains accountable to the governed. And in that sense, technology is not leading us into a new governance paradigm. It is simply bringing us back to the one we began with. The Constitution did not need decentralization technology. Decentralization technology needed the Constitution. And so, here we are. In a moment when technology is accelerating faster than regulation, faster than public understanding, and in some ways, faster than institutional memory itself, we have systems capable of executing decisions in milliseconds. But we have not yet answered the question that matters most. Who or what is allowed to govern? Because decentralization without grounding can feel like freedom, but history teaches us that it can just as easily become fragmentation, opacity, or instability. Innovation can remove intermediaries, but it cannot remove responsibility. And in that quiet space between capability and legitimacy, we rediscover something that the founders understood intuitively. Power is only safe when it is accountable. Authority is only legitimate when it is anchored. For two centuries, the Constitution has served as that anchor, not because it restricts progress, but because it ensures progress does not drift into domination or disorder. Which means the question before us is not, how do we design decentralized systems? The question is, how do we ensure they remain governed, not merely operational? Because decentralization alone does not create fairness, automation alone does not create justice, and distributed execution does not create legitimacy. That still requires something older, something foundational, something we already have, a framework where authority comes from the governed and remains accountable to them. So rather than asking whether decentralization will replace governance, the real question is, can decentralization finally operate in alignment with the constitutional structure it now resembles? If you look closely at the systems we now call blockchain, distributed ledgers, or trust-minimized execution, you'll notice something remarkable. They are trying to solve a problem the Constitution solved two centuries ago. Not the problem of computation, but the problem of power. Because distributed consensus solves only one question. Can we agree that something happened? But constitutional governance answers a more profound one. Who has the right to decide, and who has the right to challenge that decision? That distinction is everything. Blockchain, for all its elegance, can record truth, but it cannot determine legitimacy. Consensus can verify data, but it cannot define authority. Execution can be automated, but accountability cannot. And here again, we return to the founders, not as relics of a slower era, but as architects who understood something we are now rediscovering. Decentralization is not merely technical distribution, it is structured restraint. Power divided, authority bounded, execution separated from adjudication, record keeping anchored in transparency. In that light, the Constitution is not competing with modern decentralization. It is the reason decentralization exists. Because the framers knew, from monarchy, from collapse, from war, that concentrated power is not just inefficient, it is dangerous. So they engineered a system where no single actor could write the rules, enforce the rules, and judge disputes under the rules. That was not a limitation. It was the first programmable governance safeguard in human history. The same logic now appears in distributed architecture. No single node may be trusted. No process may rely on unilateral control. No system may function solely on faith and authority. Not because trust is unnecessary, but because trust without verification becomes power without accountability. And the more we examine the trajectory of digital governance, from identity systems to programmable finance to AI-driven decision architectures, the more obvious the pattern becomes. We are not inventing a new form of governance. We're returning to the original one, a structure where legitimacy flows from consent, not computation, where authority is delegated, not assumed, where systems operate within boundaries, not above them, and where the people, not the network, remain sovereign. This brings us to the truth policymakers, technologists, and citizens must now recognize. The future of governance will not be built by abandoning the Constitution, but by enforcing it inside the systems now emerging. Digital infrastructure does not replace constitutional structure. It finally has the capacity to honor it. For nearly 40 years, a single doctrine helped shape the modern administrative state, Chevron deference. Under it, when Congress failed to speak clearly or spoke broadly, federal agencies were permitted to interpret the law, and in many cases, interpretation became expansion. Over time, that doctrine drifted. What began as flexibility became latitude, and what began as interpretation became policymaking, and what began as administrative necessity became, quietly, a fourth branch of government. One that was never written, never ratified, and never consented to. This wasn't born of malice, it was born of scale. As systems became more complex, technology accelerated faster than law, and agencies stepped in to fill the gap. But here is the key constitutional reality. Authority may be executed by agencies, but it may never be created by them. And as digital systems matured, cryptographic settlement, algorithmic governance, artificial intelligence, automated rulemaking, the question that had been theoretical had become unavoidable. Who governs the systems that now govern us? Congress? Agencies? Courts? Code? No one? Chevron allowed ambiguity to endure. The post-Chevron era ends now. What this means. When the Supreme Court overturned Chevron deference, it did not merely adjust administrative procedure. It restored the original chain of constitutional authority. Law originates from the legislature. Execution flows through the executive. Review belongs to the judiciary. That structure is not a formality. It is the operating system of legitimate governance. And for the first time, the digital age must confront it. Artificial intelligence cannot write rules without delegation. Distributed systems cannot assume sovereignty because they have users. Programmable finance cannot bypass Congress because the rails are cryptographic. Identity systems cannot centralize authority because it's more efficient. Technology may accelerate execution, but acceleration does not rewrite the Constitution. This ruling arrives at the exact moment it is needed most, because we are entering a world where systems make decisions faster than courts can review them, transactions occur outside traditional financial corridors, identity becomes programmable rather than documented, and governance becomes embedded in architecture, not statute. For decades, the law followed technology. Now, technology must return to the law. And this is the pivot point, the inflection in the narrative of democracy and computation. The era of innovation without constraint is ending. The era of constitutional alignment is beginning. The message to technologists, regulators, and nations is simple. You may innovate. You may automate. You may scale systems beyond anything prior generations imagined. But you may not create power. You may only exercise power lawfully delegated. Digital systems may execute governance, but they may never originate governance. Because in a constitutional republic, code does not rule. People do. and the people already wrote the protocol. There's a quiet truth woven through every chapter of this story, from Rand's Cold War redundancy models, to Chom's privacy architecture, to Belcour's evidence timestamping, to Nakamoto's distributed consensus. A truth easy to overlook because it feels so modern, so technological, so new. But when you strip away the code, the cryptography, the encryption, the automation, you find something familiar, something old, something American, something constitutional. Decentralization did not begin in 2008. It began in 1787 with a group of men sitting in a chamber in Philadelphia, arguing, sometimes fiercely, not about what government could do, but what no government must ever be allowed to do. They did not design efficiency. They designed restraint. They designed limits. And in doing so, they created the first governance architecture in human history, where authority is distributed, power is separated, execution is accountable, and legitimacy flows from consent, not coercion. It was, in every meaningful sense, the first trust-minimized system. Not because trust had no place, but because trust alone was never enough. This is the part most people miss. Blockchain did not disrupt government. Blockchain recovered a principle government had drifted from. Artificial intelligence did not create new governance questions. It exposed the ones we had left unanswered. And programmable finance did not invent disintermediation. It reminded us that power must always be traceable, not merely operational. The future is not asking us to abandon the past. It is asking us to remember it. So, what does rediscovering decentralization mean? Not rebellion, not disruption, not replacement. It means returning to the original blueprint. Consent as authority, separation as protection, audibility as accountability, and jurisdiction as boundary. It means recognizing that digital systems are not beyond the Constitution. They are finally advanced enough to operate within it. It means the debate is not how do we reinvent governance, but how do we apply constitutional governance to the systems now building the future? Which leads to the closing realization, the one sentence this entire doctrine exists to restore. Decentralization is not a technological achievement. It is the republic remembering itself. And as we enter into an era where digital systems will mediate identity, rights, commerce, governance, and truth, the task before us is not invention, it is stewardship, not escape, but alignment, not the creation of new order, but the return of the one sworn into existence by the people and ratified as the framework under which all lawful authority must stand. There comes a moment in every generation where the country must decide whether it will drift with change or govern it. We are standing in that moment. Artificial intelligence now accelerates decision-making faster than deliberation. Blockchain now executes agreements faster than courts. Digital identity now mediates access faster than citizenship frameworks can adapt. Programmable finance now moves value faster than law can classify. Speed is no longer the challenge. Memory is. Because when a republic forgets the structure that makes liberty possible, it does not drift into chaos. It drifts into control. Not all at once. Not violently. Not loudly. But subtly. Through convenience, automation, quiet centralization, and the belief that efficiency is governance. It is not. Governance is structure. Governance is limitation. Governance is the rule that says power may act, but only under authority. And authority must be derived, not assumed, not claimed, not embedded in code, and not manufactured by network participation. Authority must trace to law, to statute, to representation, to the consent of the governed. The moment of realignment. For years, digital architecture raced ahead using the language of decentralization without the meaning of it. and yet quietly. Inevitably, we have arrived at clarity. Post-Chevron jurisprudence has restored legislative primacy. The major questions doctrine has reestablished constitutional boundaries. The federal trust layer model has demonstrated how technology can enforce rather than replace law. The 17 proofs have shown that decentralization is not innovation, it is inheritance. And so the debate has ended. What remains now is implementation. What this work asks of its reader, not belief, not allegiance, not urgency, but responsibility. Responsibility to speak clearly when others equivocate. Responsibility to preserve structure when others pursue speed. Responsibility to remind institutions, public and private, that legitimacy is not created by participation, computation, stakeholder alignment, or algorithmic output. Legitimacy is constitutional, or it is nothing. So, as we step into an era where code will execute policy, where identity will be cryptographically mediated, where elections will become programmable, and where governance will run through digital rails rather than marble corridors, we must uphold one principle. The United States does not require a new system. It requires fidelity to the one already written. Our task is not to outrun the Constitution. Our task is to implement it in every system, every protocol, every ledger, every governance layer that will define the century now unfolding. The Republic does not move backward. It remembers. And in remembering, it governs the future. I am Nicklin Decker, and this is the Republic's conscience.